Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2014, number 21. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. I'm Travis Justice, joined in studio. Usually we do this thing via Skype, but it's nice to have him back in the studio. The one, the only, former Husker great, Dr. Rob Zadisko. What's up, Doc?
Doing well. Do I sound more clear than I do on Skype?
Well, you know, Skype is a very good tool. I think we utilize it quite well. It has a nice sound quality to it, but The thing I'm going to do for next season is get you like a headset with a microphone. It'd be even better. You're a little tinty. Now you have that studio quality feel.
That's because I'm right here.
I mean, I think everybody will know that you sound a little bit better. And you've made the trip to the studio the day after the Holiday Bowl, in which is a game you said you enjoyed watching last night.
That was a fun game. That was a blast to watch.
You know, we're going to look probably more towards 2015 and where this team goes from now, but let's start with the Holiday Bowl and give that team a lot of credit. Nebraska did not quit. They didn't give up. There were opportunities to say, okay, this team's not going to bounce back, but they did not quit.
No, they did. Well, and they showed up in the first place, and I think that's even the bigger thing. They came out swinging from the get-go, and it wasn't a case of where, you know, you see a lot of football games, and you can kind of tell just right off the bat, boy, this is going to be a long day. That Michigan State game, you know, Nebraska got that early tipped pass and interception off of Connor Cook. But still, it was one of those things where, boy, the offense wasn't really moving the ball. You look, the defense was making some plays, but it just seemed like Michigan State's offensive line just kind of had control of things from the get-go. You just had a bad feeling from about minute one of that football game. Wisconsin, you know, even when Nebraska had that 17-0 lead against Wisconsin, I was still sitting there the whole time going, man, I just got a bad feeling about this. You know, we're getting a bunch of lucky breaks off of some of these just huge mistakes that Wisconsin was making. And we haven't done it. We haven't made anything for ourselves in that Wisconsin game. The only good that came out of that Wisconsin game there in the first half was solely where Wisconsin handed things to Nebraska on a silver platter. You just, from the get-go, you knew Nebraska really wasn't in it. This was a game where they showed up. I mean, they came out, punched USC in the face right off the bat. I know they had the early three and out, but they were returning the ball well on the kickoff and punt returns. I mean, Nebraska had great starting position all night long. The defense was doing well. They weren't necessarily getting into Kessler's face the whole game, but the defensive back coverage was actually, I thought, really good, considering you got a couple of NFL quality wideouts there they're trying to cover. And I'm appreciative of the fact that it wasn't a case of where they came out, they got down early, and then it was a struggle till they got back in it late. They came out, and it was just, they were trading punches back and forth the whole game.
You know, let me ask you this, and it's a serious question, and I'm not trying to stir something up here, but was it still the us versus the world mentality? They had the open seat for Bo on the bus. There was lots of Bo reminders on the field from the players. Barney, of course, talked about the staff all week long. Was it that us versus the rest of the world mentality going into this?
See, I don't buy into that all that much. And I'm one of those guys where I think preparation, I think season-long mindset is more important than a game-to-game mindset. And if you've got a team that has some strong personalities, some good leaders on it, I think on the whole, that team's going to do well. When you try and use sort of the, I call it the negativity motivators, and this is the stuff like the bulletin board material. You know what? Such and such from the other team said this 3 days ago, and we've been talking about it all week. The us versus them type of stuff, the us against the world mentality that you mentioned, that's the kind of crap that, you know what? Once another team comes out, by the time you're halfway through the first quarter, nobody's thinking about that stuff. Either they've punched you in the face and you're going to fold, or you've punched them in the face and they're going to fold. It's that kind of stuff just doesn't last. And that's why you get into these games like Wisconsin, you get into those games like Minnesota. that kind of stuff doesn't carry you through any kind of athletic contest from a motivational standpoint. That lasts for maybe about the kickoff and the first three plays of a game, and then it's done. And then you're thinking about, holy crap, this guy's doing this, and I got to do this whatever to counter it. I just don't buy into that. Now, I know the guys had Bo written on their helmets and shoes and the tape on their wrists, the seat on the bus thing. You know, I'm sure these guys were fired up. I'm sure on the whole that this was a hugely emotional effort for them, both the preparation as well as the actual playing of the game. But I think these guys wanted to go out and win the game. They wanted to go out and compete. They were playing against, you know, this was arguably from an athletic standpoint, from a talent standpoint, this was the most athletic team I think that Nebraska has played all year long.
Of course, Nebraska loses to USC in the Holiday Bowl 45-42, and that's kind of what we talked about in previous losses. It's not about losing, it's the way you lose. You know, when they lost to Wisconsin, that was an ugly loss. The way they started against Michigan State, that was not pretty. The game last night, it was a fun game to watch. It was entertaining, and I don't think too many people are holding their heads. No fun to lose, but I think they left it all out on the table, didn't they?
I agree. I think they did. You know, there's a few gripes I have, and it's at the time watching the game, and you know, I was watching it with a group of friends. You had a couple of those fourth and shorts deep in USC territory there in the second half, where they went for it on fourth down. They could have tried kicking the field goal. I think you were looking at 40 to 45 yard field goal attempts, which if you really want to split hairs, it's within Drew Brown's range. I mean, I think he could have gotten them. Now, I mean, there's always a chance he shanks it. There's a chance he misses. But for the most part, the kid's a pretty good, darn good kicker, I think, at least, especially as a freshman. You know, the smart coaching move would have been in those instances to go ahead and kick it. Now, a couple of the guys, folks I was with, made the point, you know what? There's nothing that depends on this game. Even if Nebraska won, they're looking at maybe, I don't know what, like jumping back in at 23rd in the polls, yeah. Maybe. So it's not like Nebraska was fighting for a top 10 ranking. It's not like Nebraska was fighting for some kind of championship with this. I mean, it was just a pure pride thing. And it's not like the coaching staff has any stake in next season. That point was made to me, and so it's kind of one of those, you know what, let's go for it all. You know, it's kind of like that bowl game played down in the Bahamas. It's like, hey, you got a chance to tie it and send it into overtime, and the guy went for two instead with no time on the clock. Instant loss. You know, Nebraska kind of did the same thing. Now, at the time, while you're watching it, it seems like a great decision because it's exciting, it's fun, it looks awesome. It's like, hey, you know what? Let's go all in. Yeah. I mean, let's go in and see what happens, and let's go for it on fourth down. That happened twice. They didn't get it. They could have gone for the kick, tied it, and sent it into overtime. Now, you know, there was two instances that they had a fourth and short. You kick both of those, and assuming Nebraska's defense continues to play like they played the second half of the fourth quarter, again, Nebraska wins that game. So it's a hell of a lot of fun when you're watching the game. It's a little depressing come the next morning when you're sitting there going, hey, shoot, you know what? If we had tried those field goals and made them, we would have won the damn game.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. I mean,
and it is.
People still, you know, wish Osborne would have kicked it against Miami back in the day.
Nah, you didn't have overtime.
That's true.
You had there was no overtime. You had to go for two if you were going to win. That I totally agree with. You had a chance at overtime here. You had a chance to win it. Nebraska theoretically could have been ahead with that last 26 seconds left in the game, whatever it is, after they had forced USC to punt. So it's not a case of where, I mean, we could have had USC in the same situation that they had us in at the end of that game. So I'm a little bummed about that. I know you say hindsight's 20/20, and I guess
and we play to where aren't our quarterbacks. That's what we do.
Well, no, it is, and you can make the whole thing. And I put a tweet out there about this. The whole kind of hindsight's 20/20, and I hate what ifs. I mean, I sit there going, God, what if we had kicked those field goals? What if we had we didn't give up that damn 98-yard touchdown return on the kickoff. You know, those are big what ifs. On the flip side, there's a lot of what ifs that went in Nebraska's favor, and the big thing was, you know, Tommy Armstrong. You know, I love the guy. He is an absolute gamer. But holy crap, he had a bunch. There were some miscommunicated passes and some poorly thrown balls. I counted, I think it was either four or five that absolutely just drilled USC defensive backs in the chest, and they caught one of them. I mean, it should have been that should have been a five interception night for USC's defensive backs, and instead they got one. And that wasn't even the easy one. The four or five easy ones hit the guys and they dropped them all. So those are a lot of what ifs that actually did go into our favor. So I think a lot of that stuff kind of evens out. It's the coaching decision what ifs that in hindsight I sit back and it bugs me a little bit. It's kind of like the whole against Minnesota, you've got the second and one, and it's like, hey, let's go deep and catch them off guard. No, get the damn first down and give your defense a break because they're sucking wind against Minnesota's grinded out attack. Those are the kind of things that drive me nuts, and those are avoidable what ifs, and that's what I find frustrating, because I sit there and I do think, you know what, I think at the time it was the right decision to go for it. By the next morning, I'm sitting here going, that just turned into a big coaching decision. What if? We could have had, there could have been a win here for Nebraska potentially, or at least a tie in a true overtime.
Of course, you heard Dr. Rob mention his Twitter account. You can follow Dr. Rob at DocTalkSports. He offers great advice, great insight, and that will continue. You know, I know the season's over, but we've got recruiting coming up. We've got spring season, and who knows? Doc just may hop out there.
Does it ever end in Nebraska?
It never ends. And don't forget to support our supporting sponsor, or our presenting sponsor, which would be the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy presentation coming up Saturday, January 17th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. And a big congratulations to Reese Dismukes from Auburn University, this year's Remington Trophy Award winner. He is undoubtedly one of the best centers out there in college football, and this makes him the best center in college football.
The guy has a pedigree. This guy was a finalist for this last year. You and I were looking through his bio and some of his other accolades. The guy's a ball player. I mean, he almost had this last year. And, you know, we were talking to Dave about this. Oh, boy, this was actually, I think, last year, and he was talking about the history of this award, and the thing that's really cool about it is the fact that there is not a ton of subjectivity to it. Now, there always is anytime you're selecting award winners and All-Americans, but they basically go by, okay, who is the consensus All-American? Who basically was named All-American on all the major coaches, AP, football writers, Walter Camp, et cetera? That's who wins this award. There's not a lot of – there isn't this selection committee subjectivity to it.
And you know, you and I know Dave well. That's the way he likes it. It's very simple. It's cut and dry, and there's not much politics to it.
Exactly.
Of course, Reese Dismukes will be on hand at the Remington Trophy presentation, but so will Courtney Hall, this year's 2014 Ford Award winner, former San Diego Charger, former Rice Owl. You can go see Courtney Hall. And the featured speaker this year, Bobby Bowden. So you know that's going to be very entertaining. Get your tickets or become a partner by going to RemingtonTrophy.com. It's the Remington Trophy presentation, January 17th, 2015, at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. You'd mentioned Tommy Armstrong, and he threw some bad passes last night. And
He threw some good ones, too, threw some bad ones,
up and down. He set a Nebraska bowl record for what, attempts, completions, yards, touchdown. And so, I mean, he had you look at the numbers.
I mean, it was a great game. And, I mean, Nebraska had, I mean, statistically, the offensive statistics were impressive. Time of possession, total yardage, all of that was awfully impressive.
But did Tommy Armstrong start his last game as Nebraska's quarterback?
You know, that's a hard one for me to say because, again, there was a lot of talk last night with the people I was around about how, man, you look at Mike Riley and you look at what he's done with a bunch of guys, and, man, can you just imagine what Riley's going to do with a guy like Stanton? And, you know, I don't know if I'm completely sold yet. I hear a lot of behind the scenes talk about guys. I'm blanking. The freshman out of Georgia, Bush, who he redshirted this year. He's kind of a dual threat type of guy. I think he's bigger than Armstrong is. I mean, he's one of these guys who's 6'2", 6'3", a little more lankier. I mean, he's built more like a quarterback. He doesn't have that running back, quarterback in a running back's body like Tommy Armstrong. It's going to be interesting because we haven't seen much of Johnny Stanton. We obviously haven't seen anything of A.J. Bush. He's been, like I said, redshirting this year. But these are guys that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the coaching staff does with them because you got guys with a different philosophical mindset. On the flip side, Armstrong's got 2 years as a starting quarterback. He's done some very, very good things. It's not like this guy's gone out and been wholly non-productive. I mean, there's been games where at the end of the game you're just sitting there shaking your head. But, man, it's not like, say, Taylor Martinez where you can go back and you can look at the two or three or four games where Martinez won the game for Nebraska, and then there's all the rest where it was, A, thank God he didn't lose it for us, or B, crap, he lost it for us. I mean, Taylor Martinez was just an absolute head-scratcher, in my opinion. I think a guy like Stanton, he's an interesting – he's an enigma in my mind just because we've seen so little of him. I think he's one of these guys who, you know, you heard all this stuff about how great he was. He was a man among boys. He's a Southern California kid. I mean, on paper, he looks like everything Mike Riley would have gone after when he was the coach at Oregon State. I mean, he looks like a prototypical Pac-12 recruit type of person. We've seen so little of him, which makes me wonder, is this the guy who maybe peaked his junior, senior year in high school, and that's why we haven't seen anything from him? The knock on him I've heard is that he's kind of like a Tim Tebow. He's somebody who, if you need somebody to run a quarterback sneak on third and one, he's your guy. He's got an okay arm. He's an okay runner. But, I mean, there's been some ESPN guys who've looked at both of these quarterbacks and have said, Tommy Armstrong's got a better ball. Tom throws a better ball. Tommy Armstrong runs better. I don't know. It'll be kind of interesting when you ask that question. Don't be surprised if Mike Riley comes in, takes Tommy Armstrong, and just uses him in a little bit of a different manner than Tim Beck and his staff did. Tommy Armstrong might be really, really good. We just maybe haven't seen anything yet. Let's not lose sight of the fact that he was only a sophomore this year.
And I'll follow up on that. I do want to say, if you're looking for a place to ring in the new year, make sure to do it at the Benson Brewery in the heart of Benson, 6059 Maple Street. If you're looking for great food and great beer, the Benson Brewery has it. They've been a proud supporter of the Husker Doc Talk podcast all season long. And when you want to stay up to date on the recruiting season, the spring season, and the Huskers in general all year round, go to HuskerMax.com. HuskerMax.com, your premier store for Husker content 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And Mike Riley, of course, was in San Diego yesterday. He did a lot of meet and greets with fans. He was out at the tailgates. He watched the game from a skybox. And I think a lot of people look at Mike Riley, what he's had at Oregon State. But he said something in his introductory press conference that Bill Callahan didn't do. And I hate to make comparisons there. Bill Callahan had a system in his mind, and he came here and he could have won his first year. He could have had a winning record, could have gone to a bowl game.
Easily.
And he decided to throw, you know, to force the system
on
Joe Daly. We heard Mike Riley say, listen, I have to evaluate the talent I have and really cater what we do to the talent that is given me. That should make people happy to hear that. Whether he practices it is one thing, but to say it should go, okay, he's going to assess and maybe play to the strengths and not force guys to do something they're not good at.
The one coach Nebraska's had in the last quarter century who was really good at doing that was Tom Osborne. I mean, Osborne was the kind of guy where he had a basic system. There was a notion in his head of what he wanted to do, but he always adapted that to who he had. And, you know, you look at a guy like Brooke Behringer is a perfect example. Brooke Behringer, from an athletic standpoint, is a pro-style passing quarterback. Now, he's fast. I mean, I think in terms of straightaway speed, I believe Brooke actually had a faster 40-yard dash time than Tommy Frazier. I don't think he had the hip moves that Tommy had, but it's one of those things where when Tommy went down and Brooke came in, you know, Osborne was backing him up in the shotgun. Osborne was running a ton of the offense, and you really saw the blossoming of kind of that forerunner of the spread option when Behringer was back there at quarterback. You saw all of a sudden Nebraska was utilizing tight ends in the passing game probably more than they had in their history under Tom Osborne, because Osborne was making use of the strengths that he had with Brooks' arm. And we haven't seen that for a while. I caught that. When Riley talked about doing that, the thought that went through my head was, geez, thank God you got somebody here who at least, like he said, I don't know if he'll do it, but at least if it's the most common sense thing to come out of a coach's mouth in a long time.
Well, it's the old Gallup Strengths Finder, you know, philosophy. I mean, you've probably taken the Gallup Strengths Finder. I've taken it. And if you've gone to any seminars that talk about Gallup, it's you can improve your strengths much more than you can improve your weaknesses. And if you're going to try to improve somebody, I mean, your weakness can improve, what, 7 to 10% maybe? But you can improve your strengths, what, 50 to 75 to even 100% if you focus in on it. And that's why I think Mike Riley can sit here and look at the talent that he's been left. The cupboard's not bare by any means as far as talent goes.
Nah, it'd be nice to have Amir Abdullah back. The cupboard's not. And you look at a lot of the guys contributing last night. Kenny Bell was huge. I mean, it's when he is healthy, God, it is hard to understate what he brings to that team. On the flip side, you got the next Kenny Bell with Pearson L. Pardon me for rhyming there, but you still got guys who are going to be able to step up. They still got some pretty damn impressive talent down there.
You know, Mike Riley, by all accounts, you know, kept his distance during this bowl game preparation, which is probably the right thing to do. But now, what does he have?
Of course, you say that he was attending practices.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about.
No, I mean he kept himself in a non-influence role in terms of decision making, et cetera.
What's his biggest obstacle or challenge right now? Is that keeping guys at Nebraska? Is it getting to know them? What? So he's got to send a whole guy. He's got to go recruit, but he's also got to keep this team together. What's his biggest challenge right now?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't think keeping guys in Lincoln is going to be the problem. I think once guys get to know him, give this guy a month with these players, I think they're going to love him. And I think a lot of them who have met him already do like him. You look at the recruits. Some of these guys that Mike Riley's gone out and touched base with, made contact with, I mean, there's a number of guys he's gone out and basically told, listen, you know what, we need you, we want you. He has switched wholesale from recruiting Oregon State guys to come in and trying to maintain this recruiting class. It's not like he's gone out there. You know, I think the previous staff was doing a good job identifying talent, because Riley's gone out there and seems like he's essentially gone and tried to touch base and retain all of those same recruits, most all of them at least. And so far, he's done a pretty good job of keeping that recruiting class together. I mean, the one guy that there's Dyshon Neal out of Omaha Central. He's the one guy who apparently Oregon's been recruiting him really hard all along as well. He's kind of, I think he's wavering a little bit, and I'd love to see him stay. I mean, the kid's got some bloodlines. His dad's Abe Hoskins, another Omaha Central star who's just, he was a little bit older than I was by a year or two, but I remember competing against him at track meets, and this guy was just an unbelievable athlete. I think Dyshon's a great kid. He's an intelligent kid. He's a heck of an athlete. He'd be just an insanely good defensive end. He's another Randy Gregory is what he is. But those are the kind of guys that I think if Riley's got an obstacle, you've got some of these on-the-fence recruits you've got to retain. I don't think amongst the current players, I honest to goodness don't think that amongst the guys who are really going to count for Nebraska, the guys who are going to be the movers and shakers, who would have been the go-to guys had Pelini, would Pelini not have been fired, those are still going to be the go-to guys for Riley. It's not like somebody's a great athlete and now all of a sudden they're not. So I think it's some of these bubble recruits are going to be the big thing. I think most of the players are going to embrace them. I think the biggest thing is it's going to be when next season rolls around. We're going to have to find out, is this a guy who, with all the hopes being, is he going to be able to come in and win? Is he going to be able to come in and get 9 or 10 wins? Is he going to be able to compete? Is he going to win those big games like he won up at Oregon State? That's the biggest thing, is he going to be able to come in and satisfy what Nebraskans want him to satisfy? And that's going to be winning big games, getting 10-plus wins a year, and taking Nebraska to a step above at least what Pelini was ever able to do.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I go back to 1997, and I remember the day that Tom Osborne announced that he was going to retire. I remember the last game like it was yesterday, the Orange Bowl in Miami against Tennessee and Peyton Manning. And if you would have told me after that game that Nebraska's football program, for all the success it had, especially from during that time period, would be unstable until the year 2015, I would have said you were crazy. But looking back, you can say it was stable under Frank. It really wasn't. It was never stable under Bill Callahan. It may have had the feeling of being stable under Bo, but looking back now, it never was.
It's impressive to me how unstable it was in hindsight.
Yes. Does that blow you away to go, when you look back, 1997 is the last time this program really ever had stability to it?
No, and I disagree with you. And here's why, because I remember watching that same press conference where Osborne announced his retirement. And the thought that went through my head was, you know, we've been insanely lucky to have 40 years of Devaney and then Osborne. It's never going to be the same again. No, not in this day and age. It's just not. I mean, what's the average college coaching career in one spot at one school?
Five years? Kirk Ferentz is the leader of the Big Ten at 16.
Yeah,
going on 17. I mean, but besides that, I mean, I think you're lucky to get 10 years at anywhere.
I would be willing to bet the average is somewhere right around what Pelini did, 5 to 7.
Yeah.
And so the thought has always gone through my head that just, God, we were so lucky. I mean, there was such an anomaly. And you look at the other programs like that. I mean, look at Penn State with Paterno. You look at Bowden at Florida State. I mean, take a guy like Saban, for Pete's sakes. He was at Michigan State. Everybody thought, oh, he's going to be the Tom Osborne of Michigan State. Nope. Went to LSU. He was at LSU for a while. Left, went to the NFL, left the NFL at Alabama. You know, now he's getting old. I hate saying that, yeah. But I mean, he's what, just over 60? He'll go, I mean, if he wants to stay at Alabama, but I mean, boy, he flirted with Texas there for a little bit. I mean, that stability anymore is such, it's so fleeting. And it's one of these things where when you do have it, again, you look at a Stoops at Oklahoma, you look at a guy like Saban at Alabama, you look at Urban Meyer at Ohio State. I mean, it was half a dozen years ago, he was at Florida. I mean, it's that stability, it's a mirage anymore.
And the longer you stay, the more the expectations change. I mean, Kirk Ferentz is starting to finally feel hot seat at Iowa because all these other programs have passed Iowa up from where it was back in the early 2000s when he was having success, going to BCS bowl games. They're not living up to that anymore, and now he's on the hot seat. So, I mean, the longer you stay someplace, it doesn't get easier by any means.
No, and scholarship limits. I mean, there's so much that plays into this anymore. It's just the system works against that stability.
And, you know, and how long will Mike Riley be at Nebraska? You would hope till he retires, but, you know, he's 61 years old. I mean, 10 years.
And he's in good shape.
He is
in good shape, 61-year-old. You give him, you know, if Nebraska's really lucky and this guy comes in and let's say he, and I say this with all honesty, let's say he defies the odds and is incredibly successful and averages 10 and a half wins a year. That would be good. If we get a guy who averages 10 and a half wins for a decade, that's pretty damn impressive, and we should be damn happy to have him. Let's say he does that. We're lucky if we get 10 years.
And I would agree with that number. I mean,
Osborne went 25.
And the difference, you're going to see Mike Riley age like the president of the United States, because this is a lot more high-pressure job than Oregon State.
Look at Iowa. Ferentz looks worn compared to what he did when he arrived in Iowa City.
So we start anew. 2015 will be a brand new experience. Rob and I will be here to talk about 2015. We wish you a happy, happy new year. We won't be gone for long. We'll do another podcast before the Remington Trophy presentation, which, by the way, is coming up on January 17th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Make sure to get your tickets at RemingtonTrophy.com. For Dr. Rob Zaniska, I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for enjoying the Husker Doc Talk podcast throughout the entire 2014 season.